step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Save big money in your next painting project now at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect finish for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. Save big on Dutch Boy paints. Plus, view our weekly flyer on Menards.com and get your painting project started today.
Save big.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
This is Hidden Killers Half Year in Review. A look back at some of the most compelling cases of 2026 so far. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Romy Reiner is 28 years old. She's a photographer and an artist. On December 14th of 25, she got a call from a massage therapist who couldn't reach her parents for a scheduled appointment. So Romy went to check on them. She walked into her parents' home in Brentwood and she found her father's body in the master bedroom and she called 911. And somewhere in the hours that followed, as paramedics arrived, as police took over, as news began to spread through Hollywood and beyond, Romy learned that her brother Nick, the one who'd been living in the guest house on the property, was a suspect. He was arrested that night near USC. He's now charged with two counts of first-degree murder. We spent a lot of time talking about Nick Reiner on this show, his mental illness, his legal problems, his not guilty plea, the defense strategies that might be coming. But today I want to talk about the people who haven't had a lot of focus on them, who we haven't focused on enough, the ones who have to live with what happened, the ones who didn't choose any of this, but will carry it for the rest of their lives. Jake Reiner, Romy Reiner, and Tracy Reiner, the ones left behind. Jake is 34. He was a news reporter in Texas and California, including at CBS Los Angeles, before following his father into the film industry. He's acted in a few projects, including Being Charlie, the 2015 film his father directed and his brother Nick co-wrote, the one about addiction, the one based on their family's real experiences. Romy, as I mentioned, is 28, a photographer, like her mother, an artist, the one who found the body. Tracy is 61, Rob Reiner's oldest child, adopted during his marriage to Penny Marshall. She saw her father at a family gathering the day before he died. When asked for comment after the news broke, she said simply, "I came from the greatest family ever. I don't even know what to say. I'm in shock." Three siblings, three people who woke up on December 14th with parents and went to bed that night without them. But here's what makes her situation different from almost any other grief you can imagine. These aren't just mourning children. They occupy three roles simultaneously, and those roles don't fit together cleanly. First, they're the primary mourners. There's no one above them in the family hierarchy now. No parents to defer to, no elders to lean on. They are the top of the family tree, whether they're ready for that or not. Second, they're the victims next of kin. Under California's Victim Bill of Rights, Marcy's Law, they have legal standing. The DA has said he'll consider their input on major decisions, including whether to seek the death penalty for their own brother. Third, they're the family of the accused. Nick is their brother. Whether he allegedly did or whatever he allegedly did, they share his DNA. They share a childhood. They share parents that are now dead. All three roles at once for the rest of their lives. A few days after their parents were found, Jake and Romy released a joint statement. Words cannot even begin to describe the unimaginable pain we are experiencing every moment of the day, they wrote. The horrific and devastating loss of our parents, Rob and Michelle Reiner, is something that no one should ever experience. They weren't just our parents, they were our best friends. They asked for respect and privacy. They asked for speculation to be tempered with compassion. They asked for the parents, their parents, to be remembered for the incredible lives they lived and the love they gave. What they didn't say, what they didn't need to say, is that they're now trapped in a legal process that will drag on for years. When Nixon attorney, former attorney Alan Jackson, withdrew from the case back in January, the family released another statement. This one was shorter. They have the utmost trust in the legal process and will not comment further on matters related to the legal proceedings. That's the public posture. Trust the process. No further comment. But think about what the process actually requires of them. DA Nathan Hochman has said his office will take the thoughts and desires of the family into consideration when deciding whether to seek the death penalty. That sounds like it gives them power. It actually doesn't. Legal experts have been clear. Family input is meaningful, but it's not controlling. Prosecutors can listen to the family and still do whatever they determine is appropriate based on the evidence, the law, and their own judgment. Sources say the Reiner siblings have made it clear they don't want the death penalty for Nick, but that doesn't mean they'll get what they want. It just means they had to have that conversation. They had to think about it. They had to form a position on whether their brother should be executed for killing their parents. That's the cruelty of this situation. Even when the legal system offers the family a voice, exercising that voice requires them to engage with questions no one should ever have to answer. Let me talk about grief for a minute, because there's a body of research on what happens to siblings when they lose a brother or sister, and almost none of it applies to what Jake and Romy and Tracy are going through. Psychologists talk about something called disenfranchised grief. It's the phenomenon where surviving siblings feel their loss doesn't count as much as everyone else's. When adult siblings die, or an adult sibling dies, they often leave behind parents, a spouse, children, people whose grief is more socially recognized. The siblings get pushed to the margins. Their pain is real, but it's treated as secondary. Researchers at the Trauma and Grief Center have documented this. Somehow, their grief doesn't feel as important or relevant as the grief of their parents, one psychologist noted, and that's a big problem. But the Reiner siblings don't have parents to defer to. Their parents are the one who's died. There's no one above them in the grief hierarchy. They are the primary mourners, whether society recognizes it or not. And on top of that, they're dealing with factors that compound trauma in ways the research barely covers. Romy found the body. That alone can cause post-traumatic stress that lasts a lifetime. The deaths were violent. Homicide grief is different from other kinds of loss. It's complicated by investigations, legal proceedings, media coverage, and the knowledge that someone chose to do this. And the person who allegedly chose to do this is their brother. That's a particular kind of grief that comes when a family member is responsible for another family member's death. There's a very specific type of grief there. It doesn't fit neatly into any one category. And mourning the dead, while you're mourning the dead, you're also mourning the living, the sibling you thought you knew, the person who's now in a jail cell, the relationship that will never be what it was. Sources say Jake and Romy have completely cut Nick off. They're not visiting him in custody. One insider said the decision is rooted in devastation over their parents' deaths, not a legal strategy. But here's the thing. Nick isn't gone. He's not dead. He's not someone they can simply stop thinking about. He's going to be in the news for years. His name will come up at every family gathering. His face will appear on screens. His case will be discussed by strangers who don't know the family, who don't understand the history, who treat the whole thing like entertainment. The siblings can't grieve Nick the way they grieve, or the way you grieve someone who's died. They can't hold a funeral and move on. They can't process the loss and find closure, because Nick is still alive. He's still their brother, and he's still going to be part of their story, whether they want him to be or not. There's another layer to this that I keep coming back to thinking about when going through this. Jake and Romy and Tracy knew who Nick was before December 14th. They lived through the years of trying to help him. The 18 rehab stints, the conservatorship that lasted a year and then ended, the periods of hope followed by periods of collapse, a family friend who stayed with the Reiners shortly before the death described dinners where everything seemed normal. Nick helping out, washing dishes, watching TV with the family, looking like he was on the upswing. The siblings carry all those memories now. Every good moment with Nick is shadowed by what came after. Every warning sign they had dismissed now looks like something they should have acted on. That's a particular kind of torture. The what-ifs, the should-haves. They're wondering whether any of the years of trying ever mattered. Whether anything could have changed the outcome. Whether there was some moment where intervention might have made a difference. There probably wasn't. The research on parricide, the killing of parents by children, is clear that severely mentally ill offenders often have histories exactly like Nick's. Diagnosed conditions, medications that work until they don't, treatment that's accepted and then rejected, families who try everything and still can't prevent the worst. But knowing that intellectually doesn't make the guilt go away. It doesn't stop the replaying of conversations, the second guessing of decisions, the wondering if you could have done more. So what does healing look like for the Reiner siblings? I don't think there's a clean answer to that question. I don't think there's a version of this where they get to grieve in peace and move on with their lives. Consider the possible outcomes of Nick's case. If he's convicted and sentenced to death, despite the family's reported wishes, they'll have to live with knowing their input didn't matter. And potentially years down the line, they'll face the question of whether to witness their brother's execution. If he's convicted and sentenced to life without parole, they'll spend the next several decades knowing he's alive in California's prison system, a permanent presence and name that will come up every time they introduce themselves to someone who follows the news. And if he's found not guilty by reason of insanity and committed to a psychiatric facility, they'll have to process the legal system's determination that their brother wasn't responsible for what he did, even as they carry the weight of two parents who are never coming back. There's no outcome that gives them their family back. There's no verdict that restores what December 14th took from them. And in the meantime, the process grinds on. The preliminary hearing is now scheduled for April 29th. That's when prosecutors will present evidence and a judge will decide if there's enough to proceed to trial. After that, there will be more hearings, motions, delays, psychiatric evaluations, legal arguments about mental illness and intent, and what Nick did or didn't understand. It could be more than a year before this goes to trial, and it likely will take possibly longer if it goes to trial at all. And through every stage of that process, Jake and Romy and Tracy will have to decide how much to engage. Whether to attend hearings, whether to speak to prosecutors, whether to issue statements, whether to watch the coverage or look away. They'll have to figure out how to be a family without the two people who held them together. How to celebrate birthdays and holidays, how to answer questions from well-meaning strangers. How to introduce themselves without inviting a conversation about the worst thing that ever happened to them. They weren't just our parents, Jake and Romy wrote. They were our best friends. That's who they lost. Two people who loved them. Two people who shaped who they are. Two people whose deaths will define the rest of their lives in ways they never asked for and can never escape. They asked for privacy. They asked for compassion. They asked for their parents to be remembered for the love they gave. What they got instead is a spotlight they didn't seek, a legal process they can't control, and a grief that doesn't fit into any box society has built. The preliminary hearing, like I said, is in April. The death penalty decision is pending. The trial, if there is one, is somewhere on the horizon. And through it all, Jake and Romy and Tracy will have to keep living. Keep working, keep breathing, keep finding reasons to get up in the morning when the two people who believed in them the most are gone. They didn't choose this. They didn't ask for this. They're just the ones left behind. And if you've been one left behind, you know what that pain is like. Look forward to your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube or our Substack. The links are in the description. You can also press subscribe wherever you get this, whether it be YouTube or Apple Podcasts. Please do hit subscribe. We do greatly appreciate that. And if you got a moment and you're valuing our reporting, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We'll continue our conversation in the comments section. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
You're waiting for something that isn't coming. The apology, the acknowledgement, the moment when they finally see what they did and say the words, you've rehearsed hearing a thousand times. The trial that delivers justice, the rock bottom that leads to redemption, the conversation where everything finally makes sense and you can close the book and move on. The Reiners were waiting for it. You may be waiting for it. I have something to tell you. And if you're still alive to hear it, unlike the Reiners, it's not coming. It's not coming. If you're relating elements of your life to this horrific case, and you've been following us in our series talking about surviving monsters like this. This is part five in the series, by the way. This is the wrap on this circle. This is about the end of it. Or maybe I shouldn't say the end. I should say the future. Your future. Not being hijacked by that other person. And sometimes when you're not the person that has the addiction, when you're not the mentally ill person, when you're not the personality the personality disordered individual, when you're the survivor here, when you are the one, and I hate anyone being called a victim. I don't like that. I like to rise above it. But when you're in that role, when you're the one who has been the survivor, the one who's been victimized by people like this, oftentimes we want that closure. We want, you know, just something compelling, something, whether it's a screw you or I'm sorry, just something. The reality is with people like this, it just goes. There is no ending to their taking from you until they can take no more. And that usually ends in one of two ways, you or them no longer breathing. And nobody wants either of them to happen. But it's up to you how that all goes down. Because either you can live in misery forever, hoping something magical will happen that won't. Or you can just live in misery, taking it, constantly making excuses, constantly trying to put up barriers, trying to put up boundaries that get beat down every time. And you keep watching them go down their cycles of poor decision-making that lead to chaos and, God forbid, death. The sad, disturbing reality of the situation is, do you want to go down with them? Because you are not the one that can keep them afloat. But you also damn sure don't want to be a victim to their own chaos. So waiting for that apology, thinking, just this, and it'll, or whatever closure you're looking for, stop waiting. It's not coming. The Reiners found that out the hard way. Hard ways putting it. It's almost crass, and I don't mean that. I know it's brutal to hear. I know you've built years of your life around the people that someday, there would be a resolution, a moment where the scales balance, where the pain gets validated by something external, where the story reaches its ending and you can finally exhale. But most of these stories don't end. No, that's the cruelty of them. They just continue, unresolved, while you wait for a conclusion that was never guaranteed. The person who hurts you may never acknowledge it. The system may never deliver justice. The answers you're looking for may not exist. And the hardest thing you will ever do, harder than surviving the chaos itself, is learning to live with that. Finding peace without resolution. Building a life when nothing gets fixed. Deciding that your future doesn't depend on their accountability. Think about that for a second. Deciding that your future doesn't depend on their accountability. Has that ever been in your equation? Or has it always been like, oh, that, you know, you keep going back there trying to put those blocks into place, but you're not the one to put the blocks into place. It's them. And if they're not going to do it, you can't force them to do it. And no amount of fixing it and putting circle pegs and square holes and all that will make it fit or make it make sense. That's right there. That's the work. And it starts with letting go of the ending you thought you needed. We are trained to expect closure. Movies have third acts. Trials have verdicts. Redemption arcs have transformation montages. The stories we consume follow structures that promise resolution. The wrong is righted. The villain is punished. The hero finds peace because justice was served. We internalize that very structure so deeply that we start to believe our own lives should follow it. They don't. Real life is messier. Real life is full of people who never apologize, never change, never face consequences. Real life includes victims who never get their day in court, families who never get answers, survivors who carry wounds that never fully close. The narrative satisfaction we've been promised by every movie and TV show and novel, that satisfaction is fiction. And waiting for it in real life will keep you frozen forever. Jake and Romy Reiner are going to spend years in courtrooms. They'll sit through hearings, motions, testimony. They'll see their brother's face across a room where lawyers argue about his mental state and the night he allegedly killed the parents and the end of it, wherever the verdict may end up being. They'll still have to build lives after the aftermath. If Nick is convicted, Rob and Michelle are still dead. If Nick is found not guilty by reason of insanity, Rob and Michelle are still dead. If he gets the death penalty, life without parole, or commitment to a psychiatric facility, in every single scenario, dead. The outcome is the same for Jake and Romy. Their parents are gone. Their brother is either a murderer or someone who is so broken by mental illness that he committed an act indistinguishable from murder. The trial will give them an outcome. It won't give them peace. That's the trap of waiting for external resolution. You make your healing contingent on something you can't control. The court's decision, their apology, the moment of clarity that finally arrives. And while you wait, your life stays on pause. Your peace stays just out of reach. Your future remains hostage to someone else's choices, someone else's timeline, someone else's capacity for accountability. You could wait forever. Many people do. There are things we think will fix us that won't. Justice doesn't equal peace. I've talked to families of murder victims who describe this, the years of waiting for trial, the anticipation of the verdict, the belief that when the guilty verdict comes down, something will shift inside of them, and then it arrives, guilty. The word they've been waiting years to hear, and they feel nothing. Or worse, they feel a brief surge of relief followed by a crushing emptiness, because the verdict addressed what the defendant did. It didn't undo what it cost. You can watch someone go to prison and still be broken. You can see them punished and still carry the wound. Justice is about accountability for their actions. It's not about healing yours. Those are two separate things, and conflating them will leave you devastated when the system delivers exactly what it's supposed to do. And what it's supposed to deliver to you still feels gutted. Apologies don't rewrite history, even if they say they're sorry. Even if they mean it. Even if the words are everything you've dreamed of hearing for years. The apology arrives, the damage remains. The years you lost are still lost. The trust that was broken doesn't magically repair. The version of yourself that existed before they hurt you doesn't come back. And most of the time, with people like Nick, the apology never comes. Or it comes wrapped in conditions and qualifications and blame shifting. I'm sorry, but you have to understand, ... I'm sorry if you felt hurt, but ... I'm sorry if you... It's not an apology. That's a negotiation. And you can spend your whole life waiting for words that won't arrive, or words that, if they arrive, won't heal what you think they'll heal. Understanding doesn't mean acceptance. You can know exactly why they are the way they are, the trauma, the mental illness, the addiction, the personality disorder, the childhood wounds. You can have complete clinical picture. A perfect intellectual understanding of every factor that contributed to their destruction. And still not be okay with what they did to you. Understanding the machine doesn't make you less injured by the gears. Knowing why someone hurt you doesn't obligate you to forgive them. Comprehending the pathology doesn't erase the damage. You can hold full understanding and full anger at the same time. You can have compassion for their brokenness and still refuse to let it excuse what they broke in you. Time doesn't heal. It just passes. This is a lie we tell people who are suffering. Just give it time. Time heals all wounds. One day you'll wake up and it won't hurt anymore. No. Time creates distance. That's all it does. The event recedes into the past and the sharpest edges of the pain dull slightly because you're not as close to them. But time by itself doesn't heal anything. You can be 30 years out from a trauma and still be destroyed by it. You can be decades past the damage and still carrying it like it happened yesterday. Healing isn't passive. It doesn't happen to you. It's something you build actively, painfully, one choice at a time. Choice on your part. And you can build it with or without resolution, with or without justice, with or without apology, with or without ending or the ending you thought you needed or were even owed. Here's the shift. The thing that separates people who stay stuck from people who find a way forward. Closure isn't something that happens to you. It is something you build. You don't get closure from the verdict. You don't get it from their acknowledgement. You don't get it from finally understanding why. You build it yourself brick by brick in the rubble of what they destroyed. And you build it by making a decision, the hardest decision you'll ever make, the decision to stop waiting. Peace isn't the absence of pain. It's the decision to stop letting their chaos write your story. That's it. The whole secret. You decide actively, consciously, repeatedly that your life continues, that your future isn't determined by their accountability. that you will not spend another year, another month, another day with your peace held hostage by someone who has already taken too much from you. This doesn't mean the pain disappears. It doesn't mean you forget what happens. It doesn't mean you forgive them or absolve them or pretend it was okay. It means you refuse to let your healing depend on anything they do or don't do. You take your peace back from them and stop waiting for permission to move forward. You start writing the next chapter, even though the last one never got a proper ending. I know what you're thinking. It's not that simple. The wound is too deep. The betrayal is too profound. You can't just decide to be at peace and have it happen. You're right. It's not that simple. Peace isn't a decision you make once. It's a decision you make over and over, every day, sometimes every hour. Some days you'll feel it, some days you won't. Some days you'll be moving forward and something will trigger you, a song, a smell, a date on the calendar, and you'll be right back in it, drowning in pain that feels as fresh as the day it happened. That's not failure. That's just how it works. You build a life around the wound, not despite it. The wound stays, might always stay, but you grow around it. You construct a future that has room for the pain without being consumed by it. You carry the loss, and you keep walking. Not because the loss doesn't matter, because you matter too. Because your life matters. Because the person who hurt you doesn't get to take any more of your future than they've already taken. The people who make it, the survivors who find something resembling peace, they're not the ones who got closure. They're not the ones who got justice or apologies or satisfying endings. They're the ones who stopped needing those things, who decided at some point that waiting was its own kind of dying, who choose forward motion, even when forward led somewhere uncertain and incomplete. Jake and Romy Reiner are at the beginning of a very long road. They have years of legal proceedings ahead of them, years of seeing their brother's face, years of hearing evidence about what happened in that bedroom, and years of waiting for a verdict that might not come for half a decade or more. And at the end of all that waiting, they'll still have to answer the same question they could answer today. What now? What kind of life do they build? What do they do with the weight of what they've lost? How do they move through a world where their parents are gone and their brother is either a killer or something even more tragic? How do they find peace when nothing about this situation was ever peaceful? The answer, the only answer that actually works, is that they decide to find it anyway. Not because a trial gives them closure, not because Nick finally explains himself, not because some external event grants them permission. They decide to find peace because the alternative is spending the rest of their lives as prisoners of their brother's chaos. And they've already spent too much time there. So have you. So here's what I want to leave you with. After all this, after all the guilt of knowing, after the permission to stop, after the grief for someone still alive, after the lies you told yourself, here's the ending that doesn't feel like an ending, but might be the only one that works. You're not waiting for them anymore. You're not waiting for a verdict, an apology, an explanation, or a moment of clarity that validates your suffering. You're not waiting for them to change, to see what they did, to become the person they should have been all along. You're not waiting for resolution because resolution was never guaranteed, and waiting for it was killing you. You are moving forward. Not because the pain is gone, not because justice was served, not because you got the ending you deserve, but because standing still was costing you everything and you refused to let their choices take any more of your life than they already have. Peace is practice, not an arrival. You won't wake up one day and suddenly be at peace. You have to choose it over and over in moments when it feels impossible. You'll have to decide again and again that your future matters more than their accountability. You'll have to keep walking even when the road leads somewhere incomplete and uncertain and radically unfair. But you'll be walking. That's what matters. You'll be moving forward, building something, living. The people who hurt you might never face consequences. They might never apologize. They might never understand what they destroyed. You might never get the answers you're looking for, or the closure you've been waiting for, or the ending that will make all of this make sense. And you can still be okay. Not okay in the way you imagined, not okay in the way you deserved, but okay in the way that counts. Alive, moving, building a life that isn't defined by what they did to you. Carrying the wound and walking away, growing around the loss instead of being buried by it. That's a version of the story where everything gets resolved, where the trial deserves justice, where the apology arrives and heals something, where the ending makes sense and you can close the book satisfied. That story might not be yours. It wasn't for the Reiners, and it isn't for most of the people who survived someone else's destruction. But here's what is yours. The decision to keep living anyway. To find peace, not because the chaos ended, but because you stopped letting it determine what comes next. To write the next chapter yourself, without waiting for permission, without waiting for resolution, without waiting for an ending that might never come. You don't need their accountability to be free of them. You don't need their apology to heal. You don't need an ending that makes sense to start the next chapter. You just need to decide that the next chapter is yours to write, and start writing it. That's not giving up on justice. That's not pretending it didn't happen. That's not letting them off the hook. That's giving yourself something they never could. A future that isn't defined by what they did. Take it. It's yours. Give me your thoughts in the comments section. Either on Substack or YouTube, Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. That's where you find us on YouTube. Substack, hiddenkillers.substack.com, or go to hiddenkillerspod.com. It'll take you right there. Press subscribe, join us in our communities, and weigh in. Share your stories. These ones here that go far beyond the case itself, where we're digging into the psychology, the mind. The mind behind the crimes and the minds that affect so many of us, even when maybe crimes aren't committed, but yet we still relate to these cases in very cathartic ways. We'd love to hear your story. It might just help someone else. So please do, in the comments, share. Also, press subscribe. If you're finding our reporting and our pieces here valuable, please do press subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Take us with you on the go, wherever you're getting this. Go to Apple Podcasts, press subscribe, leave us a review. We greatly, greatly appreciate that. Until next time, my name's Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane. Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind. Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games as all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
What's up, Oos? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.